This is Military Mondays with Major David Katz.
Major David Katz, how are you?
Morning, Harold. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you very, very much for asking. How's your weekend?
Very well. I pegged my emotions on the rand-dollar exchange rate.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And today, trading at 1361 for absolutely no good reason.
So that's good today. But you know that tomorrow you could be in the depth of depression.
In the depth of depression. It can happen this afternoon.
So why would you want to do that?
And then back to euphoria. That's exactly how Africa works.
No, it's not.
Happy in the morning, sad in the afternoon, happy again.
That is true of South Africa. But why would you choose to peg your emotions to that? Why can't you peg it to something else?
Peg it to something more stable. I'm open to suggestion.
Can't think of anything. Lindiwe, can you think of anything more
stable?
Peg
it to the weather.
Definitely not. Do you know how cold it was in Benoni yesterday?
That's incredible what you did.
Benoni's much colder.
I admire you. 10 kilometers. 10 kilometers.
No, I didn't do the 10.
Yeah.
Because you could do the 5 or the 10. And then at the start of the race, when I was praying that it was going to start raining and storming, then I could quickly go back to my car. It didn't. And then I made a deal with myself and I said, you know what, Howard? Look, I'm not ready to do the 10 yet.
No, it's
I did a 5 2 weeks ago. I did the 5 yesterday. I'm doing an 8 in 2 weeks time. And then I'll be up to my 10th. I didn't want to go and make myself completely miserable.
Slowly.
Look, any slower, and I can tell you they would have put me in the ambulance, but that's a whole different story. There were 80 something year olds that were flying past me.
No good for the ego. Yeah.
No, nothing. Nothing yesterday was good for the ego.
Luckily, you're bulletproof.
Lucky I'm not sensitive.
No, lucky you're not sensitive.
Can you imagine if I was?
But admirable. And today, you're okay. No stiffness, nothing.
Today I'm fine.
That is brilliant. Yeah.
Today, absolutely no issue whatsoever. but either way, but it was freezing there yesterday.
Yeah.
Absolutely freezing yesterday morning. I don't know what was wrong with Benoni.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about, we're talking Military Mondays, and the conversation that you and I wanted to have is about resistance during the time of the Holocaust, effectively.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Because yesterday was, of course, International Holocaust Remembrance Day. It's not the same one as Yom HaShoah.
No, it's a more secular.
Yeah, it would seem so. And as Anthony Reich explained, a very interesting distinction between the two is yesterday was the day that Auschwitz was liberated.
Correct.
By international troops when we...
International troops?
Well, the Russians, effectively.
The Soviet Union.
The Soviets.
Russians.
They were Russians. And where we commemorate Yom HaShoah is on the Jewish uprising in the Soweto, can you imagine? Yeah. I suppose it's Freudian, but it makes
sense. The Warsaw Ghetto.
Yeah. It was the Jewish uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto where Jews themselves fought back.
One's
more an internal and one's more an external.
Absolutely.
I guess is a way of looking at it. But let's talk about resistance at the time of the Holocaust.
Well, I think first of all, just to start, is that in my feeling is that to start off with, the Holocaust was something that wasn't really the Holocaust Memorial was not observed by worldwide Jewry until the 60s. I think we spoke about that before, and there's a reason behind it. It's because a lot of Jews felt that there wasn't sufficient resistance. Lambs to the slaughter, we've heard that type of terminology.
Yes.
And it was a pretty unfair assessment. I mean, you're asking civilians in a very bad situation who are not soldiers, who haven't been militarily trained, who found themselves in a very bad position with their families to put up some type of resistance more than they did. And that's an unfair expectation.
I mean, I think more than that is we live in an age of information. And it's so very difficult for us to put ourselves back into the 1930s and 1940s.
Certainly.
Where information could be controlled. And I mentioned it to you last week, and I'm reading this book on Jews fighting in the Second World War.
Yes.
And a discussion with a guy to a Nazi, and he says, where are the Jews? Why? They had now conquered liberated parts of Europe, and his surname was Berman from Cape Town, says, why aren't we seeing the Jews? Where are they?
Unaware of their fate.
Exactly. And here was somebody at a senior level in military fighting the Nazi regime and still not that clear what was happening.
So you've touched on a very important point, is that the Jewish effort, the resistance against Nazi Germany and her allies was uncoordinated. There was no leadership from the top. It was an uncoordinated effort against against this this mass murder, and it occurred in different continents, in different places, and done by different people, and took different forms. Not very easily recognized at that at that stage. So that's part of the reason why because of, due to the uncoordinated shape of Jewish resistance. But there certainly was Jewish resistance, and it took many many forms, and was very very significant. I mean, I would put it to you is that could the Allies have won the war without the help of the Jews? Perhaps, and possibly yes, they could have. But certainly they didn't win the war without the help of the Jews. There's a resounding no, they did not win the war without the help of the Jews. There was Jewish influence across the continents and throughout the Allied resistance to Nazi Germany.
Give me some of, give me a sense of what that resistance was and what that involvement was.
Okay, well the biggest one which we've discussed in this program before was Jews serving in the Soviet Army. There were 400,000 Jews on active service in the Soviet Army. That is a huge amount. And they filled the ranks and they filled the middle officer corps, and some of them were top generals. But not only that in the Soviet Army, not only did they do the dirty work and the fighting, but Jews had a hand in inventing different weapon systems also within the Soviet Army, such as the Katyusha rockets, those very famous rockets. I don't know if you've seen those old black and white clips with these massive amount of rockets. That's got a lot of Jewish influence in there. The famous T-34 tank, Jews had a hand in that. Certainly the construction of Soviet military doctrine. Many, many Jews behind that, and that doctrine is what won the Soviets the war. Some of the better aircraft that the Soviets used were invented by Jews. And then also very significantly in 1941, when the Soviet army was in deep trouble, and the Germans were rampant in Eastern Europe, many, many Jews organized the evacuation of Soviet industry behind the lines, which was something that sustained them. So there was a lot of Jewish resistance.
So it was multi-layered is what you're saying.
Multi-layered, absolutely, right. And very, very significant. Now, the same again in the USA Army. Similar amount of Jews served in the USA Army. Lots of Jews served in the British Army and also behind the scenes, weapon systems, etc. Of course, the famous Jewish Brigade that fought in the Second World War, fought in the Middle East, fought up in Italy. Jews involved in espionage and cryptology.
They were actually called the Jewish Brigade.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And who were they under?
They were under the British.
Under the British.
Yeah. Under the British.
Can you imagine something so politically incorrect today? Can you imagine an army having a Muslim brigade or a Hindu brigade or a Jewish brigade?
Not unknown in those times.
In those times, it would be.
Interestingly enough, the British even had a private army. It was called Popsky's Private Army.
What?
Yeah, run by a privateer. A little mercenary unit that, very effective, operated behind German lines and was...
I suppose that makes sense because they didn't want to, you know, to be normally sanctioned. Yep. And it was just, something a little,
absolutely. Off-book. But there were foreign brigades fighting there was the Czech brigade that fought at Tobruk in the Western Desert. There were Poles who fought under the
makes
British
sense.
Also.
Makes
so
sense,
there were a lot of different brigades and there was a Jewish brigade. And as I said, Jews were quite prominent in cryptology, in deciphering German signals and that type of thing. And then also Jews were heavily involved in the resistance movements behind the lines, which helped to cripple the German war effort, especially once again in the Soviet Union, where the resistance movements were very effective in blowing up railway lines and huge armies operated behind German lines and weakened the
Germans. We don't hear that much either A, Jews involved in this, or is you don't hear about Jews, and you don't hear about that much about the resistance from the Soviet Union side.
No.
We always hear about the French resistance. I don't know, maybe because they've got accents.
And the French resistance, once again, was a lot of Jews involved in the French resistance. I did a talk on Marc Bloch, the historian who joined who was a officer in the French army, a famous Jewish historian with the Nalis movement, fought in the First World War, French officer in the First World War, French officer in the Second World War, and then joined the resistance and was killed by the Gestapo, captured and killed by the Gestapo in 1944, operated in one of the French resistance movements, and lots of Jews in French resistance. In fact, we shouldn't even really call it French resistance. It was more Jewish communist French resistance, because the French really didn't resist at the end of the day. So Jews were behind that, certainly.
That's interesting. I actually wanted to ask you another thing. I came across a line in a book that I was reading. It's Jews of the Titanic. And it wasn't about the subject matter at all. But it was, and it was almost like a throwaway line. What he was saying is that because Jews have always, from an anti-Semitic point of view, their loyalty to their country has always been an issue and questioned. Are you German or Jewish? Are you Jewish first and then German second, etc.? As a result of that, there was a disproportionate amount of Jews who lost their lives in various armies in order to prove their loyalty on some either conscious or subconscious level. Would you agree with that statement?
I would agree with it. I think Jews were certainly over, let's talk First World War quickly, German army. Jews were overrepresented in the German army. They made up X percent of the population, and certainly more of them made up a percentage in the German army in World War One. They were overrepresented there, and usually Jews are overrepresented. Even in the Soviet army, Second World War, I would say Jews were certainly overrepresented in the higher ranks. And also the medals issued, very interestingly. In the Soviet Union, the medals issued, Jews once again were, overrepresented. Not a fact known until very recently, because, the Soviets made sure that they didn't give the distinction of religion or race, enlisting the recipients of the heroes of the Soviet Union.
Right.
So these are things that have come to light now. But I agree totally with that statement, is that Jews are usually overrepresented in all fields, actually.
Right, sure, sure.
Yeah.
But it was just interesting as to why this was the case. Yehudit wants to know, Bukatov Howard, what's the name of the book that you're reading? It's actually just a book that I found. I'm pretty sure that it's no longer in print. It was actually printed in like 1948 or 1950. And I've got that original copy, and it was written about, I think it was put out, in fact, by the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, whatever it was called back then. And it goes through very real and personal stories about people in the war. But the interesting and exciting thing is that Major David Katz is about to launch his book, and it is called
South Africans versus Rommel.
South Africans versus Rommel, and that's coming out in paperback very shortly.
It's already out. It's exclusive books.
Ah.
It's in the recommended section. I'm happy to tell you.
Look at that, eh?
It sells for 280 rand. So it's on the shelves.
It's actually quite a reasonable price.
Very reasonable price. I thought so. It came out in hardcover, and it was very dear. I think it ran at about 680 rand.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a hell of a lot more affordable. Mm-hmm. And the guys at Jonathan Ball are putting in a lot of effort to get it known out there.
Fantastic.
They're putting it on News 24. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, that's
fantastic.
Very, very, very exciting. And, of course, there's the book launch coming up.
February the 21st at Book Dealers of Bluebird. Book Dealers Bluebird, 21st.
Very, very nice.
6 o'clock.
Certainly, and I'm going to be there. And, in fact, I'm going to be chatting to you about your book then.
That's going to be
so
great.
So if any of our listeners are interested in coming along to that, make a note, say the date, but we'll talk about it closer to the time. It'll be David and I in conversation around about his book. At 8:43, we were talking about – oh, that's interesting. I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt myself. Hi, my grandfather fought against Rommel in Egypt. That's from Moshe. Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Yeah, many Jews in the South African army fought against Rommel up in the Western Desert. Lots of them captured at Tobruk. Lots of Jews spent their time in the Italian prisoner war camps. And when the Italians gave in, they were taken up to Germany.
What happened to them if they were Jewish and a prisoner of war? Were they treated first as a Jew or first as a prisoner of war?
That's a very interesting question. I went to a Remembrance Day ceremony down in Potchefstroom, the artillery Remembrance Day ceremony.
Right.
And I met two Jews. Fantastic. One was a Spitfire pilot who shot down one plane during his service. His 6-year service, he shot down a German seaplane over Italy.
Oh, how lovely.
So that was his whole service, but he flew for 6 years. That
Incredible.
Was the one guy. The other guy was an infantier who got captured at Tobruk, and that's the first question I asked him. I said, did they discriminate? First of all, did they know you were Jewish? He said he spent his time in the Italian prison of war camp. They knew he was Jewish. Then
yes.
He was taken over by the Germans, and they knew he was Jewish. And the Germans, because of the Geneva Convention, did not discriminate against Jewish POWs.
Isn't that
so most Jewish POWs who found themselves in German prison of war camp made it through to the end. They weren't discriminated against them
So they were treated first as prisoners of war.
They were treated only as British or whatever prisoners of war. Of course, the Russians are totally different. If you were a Russian Jewish prisoner of war, you stood no chance. Those guys died in their droves. But the fighting for the rest of the Allied armies, the Jews that were captured, seemed to have survived reasonably intact.
Very, very interesting. All right, David, just to sum it all up, Jews in the war, in the Second World War, an active part of the war effort.
I would like us to shift our thoughts to that instead of being victims. I hate this idea of these Remembrance Days, and we feel that we're victims. There's a place for that. We need to remember those innocent people, those victims that went to their deaths on an industrial scale. But we also need to remember those who resisted, and many, many resisted in different types of forms. And I think it's our duty to actually bring those different resistance movements to the fore, so people can remember those guys also.
Absolutely, and it's very difficult to do, but I think it's very, very important to at least have that other perspective. It is 8:46. That's Major David Katz chatting to me on Military Monday about the involvement of Jews in Europe. David, that obviously familiar to you.
Absolutely. It was, the author was a guy called David Sacks. He took some work of a rabbi. I can't recall the rabbi's name, who identified all of the 400 odd Jews who fought for the Boer side. Mm-hmm. In the world. Well, I'm going to tell you an interesting story. I walked into a gun shop in,
as one does.
as one does in Krugersdorp.
Right. Yes, no, absolutely.
Many years ago. And, they had a slight right-wing leaning. I mean, they were playing the Horst Wessel as I walked into the shop. So you can imagine, how welcome I felt.
Yes.
And on the back of the, shop was a big Vierkleur.
Right.
And I walked in and I took offense to the music they were playing, but I thought, okay, we can tackle this two ways. Let me try a little
bit. Oh, you're like one of our listeners now.
And when they came to serve me, I turned to the guy and I said, excuse me, what is that rag hanging up at the back of the
good
wall?
For
he
you.
Says, my friend, he says, that is the Vierkleur. I said, the Vierkleur. I said, you know, some of my Jewish relatives fought and died for that flag. He says, typical Jews, always trying to claim something. That never happened. Trying to claim our war.
Oh my word.
That was Afrikaner war. So I said, I'm going to take you on a bet.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to fax you through every name of every Jew that fought in that war on your side. He says, do that. And I faxed it through to him and he phoned me to apologize. He says,
really?
He never knew and he never understood, and he's got a totally different take on it. So that's my little story. Very, very interesting.
Listen to this. So this is from Zena Spark. Thank you for sending this. Hi, my great grandfather served in the Home Guard in Victoria West during the Boer War. His name was Samuel Kahn.
Fought on both sides.
So that's
Jews
the point.
Fought
exactly.
on both sides.
That's why I thought
there,
that was a
there was, there was, there was an interesting Jew who fought on the Boer side. His name was Yakels Cohen. Didn't speak a word of English.
I love it. Yakels Cohen.
Didn't speak a word of English. And when he was interviewed after the war, so many years after the war, didn't want to speak a word of English. 20 years after the war, he was interviewed and he spoke about the Farayas. The Farayas who, the Enhensoppers who gave up too early. And I mean, he was a staunch Boer, you know, and Yakels Cohen. Yeah.
I love that.
Fantastic.
Absolutely yeah. love that. You know, what's interesting to me is that there's a big group. There's been a significant amount of conversion from the Afrikaans community to Judaism over the last few years. And I wonder what those links, if there are links like that, that somehow have created this continuity and this flow back into the Jewish faith.
Certainly, I think the Afrikaners or Boers had a respect for the Jews being of the book.
Well, it's exactly as Mike Luba said, people of the book, sure.
And they're Calvinist. I mean, their religion is very, very Calvinist, and they rely on the Old Testament. They really believe in they bring the Old Testament as an important book to them. So there are links. There's definitely links, and there's parallels that they would like to draw. I don't know if I'd like to draw, but there's parallels between their struggle to find a homeland within South Africa and the Jewish struggle.
That's where it gets a little bit maybe more uncomfortable for us.
It gets a bit uncomfortable, but I mean, there are those parallels that they see. So they see, they in fact, a lot of them call themselves the new Israelites, and they feel that they have usurped our position as the chosen people. So, you know, there are deep roots on all sides, I suppose. Even to the lunatic fringe of the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. And Sian says, my dad's family, my father's family landed in South Africa because an uncle fought with the Boers and he told them to come to South Africa.
That's incredible.
That's amazing. Yeah. My mother's side came because they had an uncle who fought with the British.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fought for both sides. That's the Jewish way.
it's incredible. Absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, I think also it's ignorance, it's a significant ignorance on my side, is that I always picture, just because both sets of my grandparents came to South Africa during the 1930s, I see that as being the start. I mean, obviously there was this uptick of the number of Jews who came to the country then.
Yes.
But in fact, from these few messages and from what you're saying, it's quite clear that Jews were here before, which we knew obviously in theory,
yes.
But I didn't realize that they were involved on both sides of the Boer War.
Sammy Marx is another example. Mm-hmm. He had a very close association with Kruger and the Boer and the ZOR, the Zuid-Afrikaanse Republic. And they were great friends. And you got Sammy Marks Square in Pretoria, and they were great friends. And I think he supported the Boer cause to a large extent. So it's just true of life that Jews are find themselves involved on both sides, and it gives light to the fact that Jews don't support the government of the day or the country that they live in. They do, and they find themselves fighting each other on many occasions because they are loyal citizens. To their government and to their country on many, many occasions to their detriment.
Right. Absolutely incredible. I'd love your thoughts on a 34519 or 061-895-1019. Neil C. says, Howard, my auntie's father was Jewish and she married an Afrikaans man. And I think there must have been a lot of that, because when Jews came to South Africa, they were very, very... I know my grandfather came to South Africa and landed up in a place called Pilgrim's Rest. You know, who had ever heard of that?
Yes.
And
yeah.
Obviously, he was already married to my grandmother, who he sent for some years later. But if you imagine a single guy arriving in a rural area, there couldn't have been much. Couldn't have been many other Jews for them to marry, and I'm sure there was a certain amount of intermarriage at that point.
I think there was, and it was a replication of how they lived in Lithuania. Lithuania, they lived in shtetls out in the rural areas. When they came in here, they replicated a hell of a lot of where they came from, and they replicated their little communities out in the shtetlach of South Africa. And there was a lot of intermarriage. I'm sure about that. And many South Africans would be surprised to find out that they've got a strong Jewish heritage, most probably.
Very, very interesting indeed. You do need to know this, though, because on the subject,